Please be warned, this podcast contains adult content. Listener discretion is advised.
Well, hang on. Don't listen to her. Don't listen to that announcement. That's rubbish. There is no adult content in this show. It's just pure childishness. Complete childishness. Sure, there's some swearing and that. There's loads of that. But there's no adult content. It's all childish. Run the theme music.
What's this? What's this?
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
What's this? What's this?
It's Christmas time.
What's this? What's this?
It's all humbug, I tell you.
What's this? What's this?
Well, just name a trusty old Red Ryder Carbine Action 2 on the Shot Range Model Air Rifle.
What is this?
It's the Total Christmas Podcast with your host, Jack.
He's an angry elf.
Hello, you beautiful people, and welcome to the Total Christmas Podcast. I'm your host, Jack. Normally, we start off with the interactive bit. This is a little bit different, right? I was just thinking about this during the week, and I was thinking, do you know what? I want you to do something for me. Nothing major. Whatever you are, this could be really easy, right? It could be that you're driving in your car on your own, or you could be at home doing the mowing in the garden or whatever, or you might be at work, right? In an office full of people listening to this, right? All I want you to do is just say, jingle bells, wherever you are. Okay, not yet, not yet. I'm building up to it. That's all you got to do. It's not a big thing. It's just a thing, right? So you're just listening in silence, I guess, unless you're talking while you're listening. How's that work? And I just want you just to say those words, jingle bells. That's all you got to do. I'm not asking much, two words. Now, like I said, this could be really easy for you. You know, if you're mowing your lawn, jingle bells, no one's even going to hear it over the sound of the mower. But if you're in a crowded office, or if you're on the train, or if you're in the gym and you say jingle bells, people are going to look up. But you could get away with it. You could do this. You'd be like, jingle bells. And they're like, what? I say, sorry, no, nothing, nothing. There you go, so you could do that, okay? I'd prefer it if people could understand the words, jingle bells, as you say them. But, you know, so you ready? Here comes your moment, okay? I want to count to three. You're going to say it. Believe in yourself. This is your moment. You can do this. One, two, three. Did you do it? I really hope you did, because that's really Christmassy. Jingle bells. Jingle bells. If you didn't do it, you've let me down. But, you know, that's what I come to expect from my listener. Or listeners. I know there's three of you out there. Okay, well, that was that. I hope you enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed saying it. And when I'm going to be listening to this back, because I have to listen to it to make sure I've edited out all the rubbish bits. I know the whole thing's rubbish, but you know what I mean. I'm going to say it because I believe in myself. And I believe in you. And I believe in Christmas. I don't think I've got any other housekeeping, so we're going to start the show with this.
I'm singing. I'm in a store and I'm singing. I'm in a store and I'm singing!
Hey! There's no singing in the North Pole.
Last episode, boys and girls, I don't know if you remember, but listener Jason Matusiak sent me a load of songs that he thinks are classics in the US. Not massive classics, not like White Christmas or Mariah Carey, like none of those massive ones, that, you know, but there's songs that most people would have heard in the US. He sent me 11 songs. I covered six last week, I got five more this week, and then two bonus ones that you might know if you're from the Washington area. So here comes the first one, have a listen to this.
Met my old lover in the grocery store. The snow was falling Christmas Eve. I stole behind her in the frozen foods, and I touched her on the sleeve. At first, but then her eyes flew open wide. She went to hug me and she spilled her purse, and we laughed until we cried.
Now that was by Dan Fogelberg, and the song is called Same Old Lang Syne, and it was released in 1980. Now Dan Fogelberg, he's had four top 10 hits in the US and 11 top 40 hits. I don't think he ever had a hit in the UK, and I'd never heard of him. And this song is an autobiographical song. It's a narrative song, and he tells a story about how on Christmas Eve, two old romantic interests bump into each other in a convenience store, and then they go and chat for a couple of hours about how their lives have turned out. And it got to number nine in the US on the charts there back in 1980. So what's that, 46 years ago now? Goodness me. I hadn't heard it. And do you know what? I think from now on I will hear it. And I'm even thinking about talking about it in an upcoming episode because I like it so much. Lovely song. Can't believe it's not a classic over here. Let's have a listen to the next one. Okay, that was Billy Squire, and the song is called Christmas is the Time to Say I Love You from 1981. And Billy Squire, he's had four top 40 US hits, a lot of decent album sales as well. And this one, it wasn't actually a release in itself. It was the B-side to a song called My Kind of Lover, and that one reached number 45 in the charts. But this one, what happened was, he was performing it at MTV, and he got a bunch of MTV VJs, that's a video jockey rather than a disc jockey, to get involved, and other staff that were there at the time, other record company staff as well, and they're all singing along. And that's the version you heard just then, that's on YouTube. Yeah, they recorded the video of them all singing it together, and apparently that's a bit of a hit as well. Not that I'm aware of, sadly. Another one that had never crossed my radar at all. But a nice song, I think. Yeah. Now, let's have a listen to the next one.
Santa baby, that Cadillac is falling apart, won't start. A private plane, it'd be smart, Santa baby. So hurry down the chimney tonight. Though the yacht was rather chic, now it's really shut. Last week it sprang a leak.
Okay, so I was familiar with this one. This is Eartha Kitt, of course, and this one is called This Year's Santa Baby. So Santa Baby came out in 1953. This one came out in 1954, and pretty much as a sequel to the previous year's Santa Baby, and the same writer rewrote it. Yeah, the original got to number 4 in the US, number 44 in the UK when it was first released, but this version didn't seem to chart anywhere, from what I could gather. And I had heard of it, but only because I listened to a lot of other Christmas podcasts. Now, I can't remember which Christmas podcast it was. I wouldn't be surprised if it was Tinsel Tunes. Whichever podcast it was, they talked about it and briefly mentioned this version. And to be honest, it's just a bit rude, really. The first one, she's asking a lot. And now in this one, she's just a complete ingrate and saying, OK, all that stuff you bought me last year, not good enough. Turns out she got all the stuff that was on the list. If you listen to the lyrics of this, she got all the stuff she wanted on her list. And now she's not happy with it. She wants even more. Cheeky is what I call it. She don't deserve nothing. Yeah, so I was aware of it, but not one I'd heard ever on the radio or anywhere other than on a podcast. Yeah. Okay, I don't know how big a classic that one is in the US, if that does get some airplay as well as the original. I don't know. Okay, now, here comes the next one.
Mom got drunk and Dad got drunk at our Christmas party. We were drinking champagne punch and homemade eggnog. Little sister brought her new boyfriend. He was a Mexican. We didn't know what to think of him. Tell us sang.
So that song, boys and girls, is by a gentleman called Robert Earl Keane, and it's called Merry Christmas from the Family, and it was an album track from 1994. And the song is about a Texas-style Christmas, and he sings about all the other members of the family. And I'd never actually heard of it. No. Fun song, though. Lots of fun. And it was really popular. In fact, it was so popular that he wrote a sequel featuring the same characters that were in the first song, and he called this one Happy Holidays, Y'all, and that was in 1998, so that was 4 years after the original. And then he published a book, Merry Christmas from the Family, in 2001. I don't know what the book's about. I don't know if it's a novel based on all the characters. I'm not sure. I could look it up. Maybe I should. I'm looking it up. Okay, so I found it on Amazon, and it says, using authentic Keen, that's, you know, Robert Keen, using authentic Keen family photos, recipes and craft instructions, it illustrates all the verses of the song, which you can sing along with on the accompanying CD. There you go. Two songs and a book. Fair play. Never heard of it. Never. Which is a shame. Because it's fun. Okay, here comes the last one. Have a listen to this.
The season's upon us, it's that time of year. Brandy and eggnog, there's plenty of cheer. There's lights on the trees and there's wreaths to be hung. There's mischief and mayhem and songs to be sung. There's bells and there's holly, the kids are gung-ho. True love finds a kiss beneath fresh mistletoe. Some families are messed up while others...
Now, that song is the Dropkick Murphys, and the song is called The Season's Upon Us from 2012. Now, I was familiar with that, and the only reason I am familiar with that is thanks to my dear friend, Frank Arnold. Yeah, Frank and Shelley, that came to visit. When they were here about a month ago, Frank talked about that song and said I should cover it on the show. Yeah, and he sent me a link to it. And it's the exact same YouTube link that Jason sent me for this song here. That's the only time I'd heard of it. Now, I'm sure most listeners would be familiar with the Dropkick Murphys because they wrote the song Shipping Up to Boston, which was on the soundtrack to the film The Departed. That's how I'd heard of the Dropkick Murphys. And this song, The Season's Upon Us, got to number 23 on the US rock chart. I don't know what the difference is between that and the standard chart, but number 23 on the rock chart, that's not bad, is it? Something. But I hadn't heard of it until Frank mentioned it. So that's another one that I'll have to look at in an upcoming episode. So there you go, boys and girls. That was the five songs that Jason sent me, and the only ones I was familiar with was the Eartha Kitt one and that Dropkick Murphys one, but only because Frank mentioned it about a month ago. So that was the main 11, but now, as a little treat, we've got two more songs, and these ones are classics in Jason Matusiak's local area. Have a listen to the first one.
The tourists have found their way home. Mr. Jefferson standing the midwatch. And there's a star o'er the Capitol dome. It's Christmas Eve in Washington, America's hometown. It's here that freedom lives and peace can stand her ground.
So that song was by Maura Sullivan and it's called Christmas Eve in Washington and it's from 1982. And here's the deal. She was a recurring guest on a radio station, WMZQ FM, and she would create comedy songs from ideas that were sent in from listeners. And she wrote this one and released it as a single, and within a couple of hours, apparently, of it going out, she'd sold 1,000 copies on cassette, because that's how long ago it was. And the song, back in 1982, raised $180,000 for children's charities. Isn't that nice? The answer's yes. In fact, it's very nice. That's a good one. Like I said, never heard of it. And here comes the final one. Have a listen to this.
But a big fella came out of nowhere and he sat right down on Santa's knee. Well, the whole place stopped dead as the big fella said, "Dear Santa, I appreciate you listening to me." And he said, "Oh, I want crabs. For Christmas, oh, only crabs will do." Oh.
So that was a chap called David Dubois, and the song is called Crabs for Christmas from 1981. And it's about a chap from Baltimore who's living in Houston in Texas, and he's in a department store asking the Santa Claus there if he can have some crabs and a beer for Christmas. And this was self-recorded and self-released by David Dubois. Now, David Dubois had the idea of releasing a Christmas song, but he thought, I'm never going to be able to make something like the Bing Crosby or the Nat King Cole type of songs. But then he heard Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer, and he thought, hang on, well, I could do that easy. And he did, and it sold about 12,000 copies in Christmas 1981. So that was that, boys and girls. I want to say a big, big thank you to Jason Matusiak for sending those through. I've enjoyed listening to them, but more than that, I hope you've enjoyed listening to them too. And maybe there'll be ones that you've added to your playlist. I don't know. Anyway, thanks again. Now we're doing this.
Do you hear what I hear?
Do you hear what I hear?
We should all know our hidden abilities. I mean, I can make drinks disappear. So what's your superpower? Now, sometimes a "do you hear what I hear" moment can be more than a word. It can be a phenomenon, an event, a festive ritual that to an American audience may seem wonderfully strange. This can be true even when we've tried to model and adopt the same practice here with feeble results. In the States, we generally view commercials to be an unwelcome interruption. They are an obstacle standing between us and our show or the game. Now we complain about them, we pay extra to get rid of them, and most of all, we just try to fast forward through them. And yet, at the holidays, while we are waiting for the commercials to end in England, they are looking for them to begin. Over the past decade, Christmas advertisements from John Lewis have captured the hearts and minds of the Brits by spreading good cheer throughout the festive season. Sitting down to watch the new John Lewis commercial has become an annual holiday tradition, like picking out a Christmas tree or putting up your lights. These are often treated like the opening of a new film. Newspapers will review them. They are ranked on social media, and families will debate them. You may actually hear someone say, "I've just seen the new John Lewis advert. Now it feels like Christmas." And this at a time when here in the U.S., we wonder who is even watching these anymore. John Lewis is a high-end chain of department stores in Great Britain. They have been making commercials for years, but in the beginning, they were similar to other retailers, just listing items that you could buy at the store. Everything changed when they moved into storytelling. Suddenly, instead of selling, they were entertaining. The marketing became secondary, which captured the public's imagination. These advertisements barely feature the products they're selling. There's no mention of the lowest prices of the season, the doorbuster discounts, the limited time offers. Instead, the message is to celebrate kindness, family, and nostalgia. The retail part is almost non-existent, while Christmas itself takes center stage. There was the snowman who travels around the countryside trying to find the perfect gift for his wife, or the middle-aged man who desperately learns to skateboard for the foster child he wants to connect with, or the harried dad taken back to the glory teen days that he misses, but realizing that the family he now has is much more precious than his youthful memories. The trend John Lewis started works because they have transformed the advert from something you want to ignore into something you want to watch. And even the name reflects a cultural divide. From a "do you hear what I hear" perspective, this abundant good cheer also tugs at my head with the term advert. In Britain, they're called adverts, which is a shortened abbreviation of advertisement. But this is not what we say here, whereas we may refer to print or online ads on television or on the radio. Those are called commercials. Americans tend to emphasize their commercial purpose. Now, this may seem like a slight linguistic difference, yet it perfectly illustrates how the two countries approach holiday advertising. The British advert has become an annual cultural event, while the American commercial is still considered an intrusive sales pitch. Now, the irony is, there is a national holiday here when advertisers in America will pull out all the emotional stops and the creative firepower to put out their best commercials using heartwarming images, cinematic production values, big celebrities, and orchestral music, all for the Super Bowl. Cheers and Happy Christmas!
That's incredible. I thought Bob was just going to be talking about our Christmas adverts. I didn't realise he was actually going to bring up the fact that, yeah, we call them adverts, you guys call them commercials. Didn't even cross my mind that was coming up. Fantastic work, Bob. Fantastic. The Christmas commercial thing, it is a modern phenomena. It really is. John Lewis is the big one, but they don't always have the best advert. Because they seem to be the ones that started it, they seem to always be the most prominent one. The Sainsbury's have got some pretty good ones in the past. Yeah, that's a supermarket chain. I could list a load, I'm not going to bother. But I will say this, in previous years, Adam Parker on the Merry Britsmas podcast has had people come on to his show and review the Christmas adverts, almost like a film review. And one year, me and my girls, we reviewed the Walker's Crisps advert. It was a good one, if I remember correctly. It's not something I've talked about on the show. I sort of feel like I should, but at the same time, because Adam does such a good job, I sort of left it to him. Anyway, great work, Bob, and he's going to be back again in a bit. But now, boys and girls, we're doing this. This is the quiz, this is the quiz, this is the quiz, this is the quiz. It's the quiz, it's the quiz, everybody knows that it's the quiz. So, here's the deal. Last episode scores quite a high scoring one. The lowest score was only 6 points. I've got to start by saying, I made a mistake, boys and girls. I made an error. I said I scored 9. I didn't. I got 2 wrong. I scored 8. I lied to you. And I feel bad about that. And I've been kicking myself about it for the last 2 weeks. But now I've come clean and I feel better. Okay. So, with 6 points, we have David Ferguson, Todd Pulte, and Brian McGloin. With 7 points, we have Caroline Cole. She said it's either 6 or 7 because, do you remember the question about a visit from St. Nicholas? She put down 'twas the night before Christmas. I'm giving her the point because the book said 'twas the night before Christmas. You get the point, Caroline. You got 7 points. Caroline Cole, John Gomez, Frank Talley, Stephen Beach, Ed Daly, and Troy. I don't know his surname, but Troy is a presenter of the Christmas Everyday podcast. Now, the Christmas Everyday podcast started back in April 2025, and it's been going, well, over a year, obviously. It's up to about episode 47, I think it was. Yeah, definitely worth checking out, boys and girls. Definitely worth checking out. Christmas Everyday podcast. Have a search for that and you'll find it. If I remember, I'll put a link in the show notes as well. With 8 points matching me, we've got Mary Pulte, Mike Westphal. Don't forget, boys and girls, it's still July, so Mike Westphal is still releasing new episodes of the Advent Calendar House podcast. Make sure you're checking those out. Martin Goodman, Jennifer Kay, and Dave McRae. And with 9 points, no one scored 10, but with 9 points lording it up over us, we have Pamela Wootton and Sean Sotka. Sean, of course, from the Christmas Podcast podcast. Well done, you two, for scoring 9. Yeah, I'm a bit disappointed in myself that I got beaten again. I swear there was a time when I was, like, getting more than everyone else every episode. But now I'm just a regular. I'm just a normal now. Disappointed. Let's hope I can do better this week. So I've got 10 questions for you, kids. Here comes your first one. We shall call this question, question number 1. I think that's a good name. It's a strong name. It's an apt name. In which US city does the movie Godmothered take place? I don't know if you're familiar with that film. It's a Disney film, I'm pretty sure. I know it's on Disney Plus. I watched it, and they've given you 4 options, though, so that helps. Is it in New York, Los Angeles, Boston, or Chicago? Which one of those 4? Okay, rack your brains, kids. Do your best. Next one. What animal was the star of The Flight Before Christmas in 2021? The Flight Before Christmas. What animal? Okay. Now we're up to question number 3. What is the name of the first church service on Christmas Day? Okay, what's the name of the first church service on Christmas Day? Next one. It's a true or false one. The official name of Brussels sprouts in the country of Brussels translates to fairy cabbages. Is that true or is that false? In Brussels, do they call Brussels sprouts fairy cabbages? Question number something. And again, I think that's a good name. It's a strong name. It's an apt name. What is the name of... Oh, it's an easy one. We've had this loads of times, but it's probably the first time it's been out of this book. But I know I've asked this question before. I'm asking it again. So you know what? I've got to throw a bone to some of you. I don't want you emailing in because you scored 0. So, you know, don't complain if we've had this question before. You should be grateful. What is the name of Scrooge's deceased business partner in A Christmas Carol, in the book? Next one. What links the singer Dido, Shay McGowan and Chris Kamara? Chris Kamara is a football pundit in the UK. Now we've got another true or false question. In medieval times, people would eat roast peacock at Christmas. Is that the God's honest truth? Or is it a big steaming pile of bullshit? Right, where are we now? Fill in the blanks. Got two blanks for you, kids. Two blanks, you're going to fill them in. Complete the name of the classic American Christmas cartoon first broadcast in 1965. A blank, blank Christmas. Tricky one, if you don't know it. Easy one if you do. We've discussed this before. I'm just going over old ground, really. Right, what are we up to now? Right, what's that? Oh, here's a good one. Right, which country did the Elf on the Shelf originate? What country did that originate in originally? Yeah, what did it originally originate in? What country? Now, that's a tricky one. In what year was The Snowman and the Snow Dog first broadcast? Now, I've talked about this before. In the US, you've got all your standard Christmas specials that you watch every year. Your Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, that sort of thing. In the UK, the only one we've really got of those, maybe two, is The Snowman. That was originally from the early 80s. Then they brought out a sequel. And the sequel was The Snowman and the Snow Dog. But what year? What year did they do such a thing? And the last question is a true or false question. So, in Argentina, gifts can be bought by Papa Noel or El Nino Dios. And that is Father Christmas or the baby Jesus. Is it true that those are the two people that might be bringing you gifts on Christmas Day? Hmm? Is it? Are they? Well, we'll find out right now, because here come your answers, kids. Question number one. In which US city does the movie Godmother take place? I took a stab at this. I was thinking, I don't think it was New York. And it wasn't all bright and sunny like LA. I'm saying Boston. I was right. It was Boston. Question number two. Now, I'm disappointed about this, boys and girls, because I was thinking of a different film that's also called The Flight Before Christmas. But the one I was thinking about was from 2008. And from what I remembered, it was about a dog that wanted to go and be a reindeer. It wasn't Olive the other reindeer, okay? That's what I thought. But it wasn't anyway, right? This other one, I've just looked it up. I just looked it up a second ago, okay? The one I was thinking about, 2008, The Flight Before Christmas. One of the voices is Norm Macdonald. You know Norm Macdonald from Saturday Night Live? Yeah, passed away? Yeah. It wasn't about a dog anyway. It was about a reindeer that was afraid to fly. That, I think that's why I got it confused, because I was thinking of a dog that couldn't fly. It was a reindeer that was afraid to fly. Yeah, anyway, that's The Flight Before Christmas, but that's 2008, and it's about a reindeer. Well, this one from 2021 was Shaun the Sheep. Yeah, it was a Christmas movie they made, and I got it wrong. Oh, the humanity. I'm disappointed, kids, I'm disappointed. Right. Right, next one. What is the name of the first church service on Christmas Day? Well, here's the thing. You're thinking, Christmas Day, well, in the morning, what would they call it in the morning? Well, you've got to think, Christmas Day starts at midnight. Midnight after Christmas Eve is the morning Christmas Day midnight mass, isn't it? Yeah, little bit of a trick question there, kids. I hope you got it. Thank goodness I did. It almost makes up for the Shaun the Sheep fiasco. Next one. True or false? The name for Brussels sprouts in Brussels is fairy cabbages. True or false? It's false. Hooray. Next one. What is the name of Scrooge's deceased business partner in A Christmas Carol? That's Jacob Marley, obviously. Unless you're watching A Muppet's Christmas Carol, and then it's Jacob and Robert Marley. But you're not watching that. You're reading the book. Good for you. You're cultured. Next one. What links the singer Dido, Shay McGowan and Chris Kamara? Well, the answer, of course, is they were all born on Christmas Day. I took a guess at that. I don't know when their birthdays are. But I took a guess and I got it right. So I'm happy. Next one. True or false? In medieval times, people would eat roast peacock at Christmas. Well, you know what? They would. Yeah. Roast peacock. Well, you eat what you can, I guess, kids. Now, this next one, I got it right, but it took me a long time to get it. I was sat there staring at it, thinking, what? Christmas? What? Complete the name of the classic American Christmas cartoon first broadcast in 1965, A Blank, Blank Christmas. Well, I thought, hang on, Charlie Brown. And Charlie Brown is pretty much my all-time favourite literary character. Nearly every t-shirt I own has got Charlie Brown on it. And it took me a while to get it, but I got it, kids. Okay, which country did The Elf on the Shelf originate from? Originate. It was the US. Of course it was. I'm wondering if some of you were like, oh, I don't know. I wonder where that came from originally. Yeah, it was the US. Okay. Right. Oh, we're up to number 9 now. Oh, tricky one. In what year was The Snowman and the Snow Dog first broadcast? If you got this correct, you guessed it. There's no way people know this. Because I'm there, I'm thinking, right, I remember where I was living at the time. And I remember other stuff about that Christmas. Because it was quite a big thing when it came out. A lot of hype about it. Everyone, well, I say everyone sat around to watch it. I know I did, first time it was on. Yeah, and the year was 2012. And do you know what I put? 2011. Yeah, disappointed in that I am. And the final one, true or false? In Argentina, gifts can be bought by Papa Noel or El Nino Dios, meaning Father Christmas, or the baby Jesus. And the answer is, it's true. Yeah, those are the two gift bringers, Papa Noel or El Nino Dios. There you go. That was your 10 questions. And kids, I managed to score 8 again. I got the Shaun the Sheep question wrong, and I got the Snowman and the Snow Dog wrong. Other than that, I did all right. I'm proud of myself. Make sure you send me your score, kids. It's very easy. Anyone can do it, even you. Be part of something, kids. Be part of something. Now we're doing this.
Where are you, Christmas?
Where are you, Christmas? How about Brescia, Slovenia? Nestled in the foothills of the Julian Alps, Brescia is best known as Slovenia's most important Catholic pilgrimage destination, but it also has a nativity museum. The museum houses an extraordinary collection of nativity scenes from Slovenia and around the world. It showcases more than 500 nativity scenes from 82 countries. The museum offers a look at how different cultures have interpreted the birth of Christ through their artistic traditions and craftsmanship. Each display reflects their homeland and traditions that have inspired generations to recreate the nativity. It is a reminder that although Christmas is celebrated differently across the globe, the story at its heart is the same. The museum also has a dedicated gift corner. They sell unique, locally crafted nativity pieces, holiday figures, and Christmas items all year long. The Christmas journey doesn't end in Brescia. A short drive away is the town of Radovljica, which is home to the Lectar Gingerbread Workshop. Visitors can watch a 250-year-old tradition of making, baking, and hand-decorating the country's iconic red gingerbread hearts using techniques that have been passed down for generations. The sweet aroma of spices fill the workshop, and the hearts double as festive decorations, making them a classic Slovenian holiday souvenir. Then you can continue on to nearby Lake Bled. You will find mountain scenery with a clifftop castle, a picturesque church, and crystal clear glacial waters. No visit to Lake Bled is complete without wandering through its artisan gift shops, where Slovenia's rich traditions are beautifully displayed on every shelf. Family-owned boutiques offer handcrafted wooden ornaments, delicate lace, festive decorations, and intricate holiday keepsakes. Strolling these cozy streets with the Emerald Lake and a medieval castle as a backdrop, it feels like something from a fairy tale. Now, if you know of another timeless location full of mountains, lakes, and nativity scenes, you recite it for Jack, he'll illustrate it for me, and together we'll tell you where to find Christmas around the world.
I tell you what, I bet there's a nativity scene that they haven't got in their museum, and that's the crappy one I bought from Tesco's about 20 years ago. I got it real cheap because the box was damaged. Yeah, still got it though. 20 years we've been putting that out, I'd say. Roughly 20 years anyway. It's not a great one, but it's Christmassy, isn't it? Great work there, Bob. Another place we've all got to visit. I'll probably see you all there on the weekend, actually. I say it every episode. I'm saying it this episode. Go and listen to Bob's podcast, Festive Foreign Film Fans. I know you're going to enjoy it. Thanks again, Bob. Now, boys and girls, we're doing this. So boys and girls, as I'm sure you're aware, occasionally I don't do a version of A Christmas Carol, and instead, I do a Muppet Christmas special, and this episode's Christmas special of the Muppets is an episode of a show called The Wubbulous World of Dr. Zeus.
Tighten up, get loose.
In the wubbulous world. In the wubbulous world of Dr. Zeus.
Yeah. I'm guessing you haven't heard of it. You might have. I hadn't until a few years ago. It ran from October 1996 till May 1998. There was two seasons, and it was originally shown on Nick Jr. And what this was a combination of Dr. Seuss characters, and those characters were created visually by Jim Henson's workshop. Two of my favourite things, The Muppets and Dr. Seuss. Now, the first series, it took the original characters from different Dr. Seuss stories, for example, The Lorax, or The Grinch, or Yertle the Turtle, or Fox in Socks. It took those characters and created new stories with them. The second series was a bit different. They changed it quite a lot. This was a bit more like The Bear and the Big Blue House, but instead of it being The Bear and the Big Blue House, it was The Cat in the Hat and his playhouse. And he lived there with cats A, B and C. I don't know if you remember those there in The Cat in the Hat came back. And the show was sort of interspersed with short stories with other characters. Now, the story I'm going to talk about today came from Series 1, and the episode is called Mrs. Zabarelli's Holiday Baton. And this was first shown in December 1996. And we get an intro at the start with the Cat in the Hat, which he often did in the episodes of the first series. And he tells us that it's the pageant on Jingle Day Eve. Yeah, we don't have Christmas, we have Jingle Day. Do you know what? I'm going to let the Cat in the Hat explain what Jingle Day is. Have a listen.
Jingle Day Eve is the year's shortest day.
Its night stays so long, it might not go away. At least, that's what they say. That's what they... Right.
So, Mrs. Zabarelli...
Hey, you can call her Mrs. Z.
Oh, thank you. That's very kind of you. I will. Mrs. Z, she's been doing this pageant for 49 years. But the pageant show is always different things. But every year, it ends with the finale of the clinking of the tink. And it's the youngest person in the pageant that does it. And this year, it's Annie Galou. And she's scared. And this was annoyed me a little bit. Because you got Mrs. Z at the front conducting the orchestra or the band or whatever. You don't see anyone else on stage apart from Annie Galou. I thought they could have just had a few people playing instruments. They didn't bother. It's just Annie Galou there holding this tink, which is a bit like a triangle, you know, the instrument, but just like a bit more curvy and stuff. And she's got a little hammer and she's scared to do it, which is not difficult, love. You're just tapping a hammer on something. Anyway, Mrs. Z sees that she's scared, goes up to her and says this.
Annie, we don't know what we can do until we try. Okay?
That's pretty much the moral of this story. And we got the moral of the story right at the very start. And Annie Galou clinks the tink and the sun rises. And everyone's happy. Then we cut to many years later, and Annie Galou, I'm guessing she's in her late teens, might even be early 20s. I'm not quite sure. They didn't give us her age, but she's definitely grown up. Different haircut, different face, to be honest. She's helping organise the pageant this year, and Morton is going to clink the tink. Now, let me explain Morton. I'm sure you're familiar with Horton Hears a Who. That was a film that came out about 20 years ago. Jim Carrey did the voice of Horton. He's an elephant. Here's a who. Not going to go into the story of it. There was a previous Dr. Seuss story called Horton Hatches the Egg. And in this one, this bird has laid an egg and she gets Horton to sit on it for her because she's busy. And she starts going off on all these wonderful holidays and she completely ignores her egg. And Horton has to hatch it out. And he does. And when he hatches it, out comes not a bird, but a bird elephant. It's half bird, half elephant. Because he's raised it under his bum, it's turned out as an elephant that can fly. Very small, but nonetheless, an elephant that can fly. That elephant bird was called Morton. And Morton is the youngest person in the pageant, so he is going to clink the tink this year. So Mrs. Z is on her way to the pageant. Don't forget, like I said, Annie Galou's already sort of trying to organise it with the other people. And she's on her way to the pageant, and she starts talking to Morton, and Morton's getting scared because he hadn't been practising enough. Then we cut back to Annie and the pageant, and I should say, at this point, we get Fox in Socks and Mr. Knox from the same book, Horton, Morton's dad from Horton Hears a Who, Jane and Junior Kangaroo, who are also in Horton Hears a Who, and also a bunch of monkeys. that I think were from the Jungle of Zool, which is also from Horton Hears a Who, and also Fedwick the Moose, who's in his own story. And I was reading that story to the girls only the other night. Yeah, about a moose. I'm not going to go into it, but he's another Dr. Seuss character. Anyway, those are the only ones that I recognised. And everyone's getting a bit stressed out at the pageant, but they all know that it's going to be okay when Mrs. Zabarelli turns up and we get this song.
What do we do if it rains? What will we do if it snows? Only Mrs. Zabarelli knows.
Help, look out, help!
Only Mrs. Zabarelli knows.
So it's very clear that Mrs. Zabarelli is the key to the show going smoothly. Then we get a little bit with Fox and Knox, and I could tell you it, but it's not that special. They're just jingling some bells. It's mildly funny if you're a preschooler. Then we get the Kangaroos, and they've been practicing their dance, and that's all going quite well. Then we get Horton playing his tuba, and that's going well as well. And then, this is my favourite bit in the whole episode. This is actually the only bit I thought was mildly humorous. This little guy, little pink guy, comes up to the microphone, and, well, I'll play it for you.
Greetings. With your kind indulgence, I would like to share with you a timeless holiday classic.
Every Who down in Whoville liked Christmas a lot. But the Grinch, who lived just north of Whoville, did not.
Yeah, I thought that was quite funny. He starts off all meek and quiet, and then he's got this operatic voice as he's reading it. But I enjoyed it, even if you didn't. Then we get a reprise of the Mrs. Z song, and they're emphasising the point that don't worry, everything's going to be okay because Mrs. Z is going to organise the pageant. It's going to be fine. Then Mrs. Z turns up. And before we go any further, I just want to talk about Mrs. Z's outfit. She's wearing what looks like a jumper, but it's also got gloves. But the gloves are part of the jumper. And I don't know if that's something you can buy, or if you could buy it back in the late 90s. Not something I was ever familiar with. But I saw that and I couldn't take my eyes off it. There's no line between the end of the glove and her jumper. It is all one thing. And then I noticed a bunch of the other characters are wearing the same type of jumper or sweater, you might want to call it, where the glove is part of... Is that something? Is that a thing? If it's not, it should be. You heard it here first, kids. Well, I say that. They invented it back in 96. I probably can't get the patent for it. Anyway, who cares? It's not important. I'm not getting into knitwear. Don't worry about that. Anyway, Mrs. Z turns up, everyone's happy, everything's going to be okay from now on, but she's had a thought, and she's decided, after 49 years, she's going to pass on her baton to Annie Galou, and Horton gives us this.
No offence, Annie, we need you, Mrs. Z.
That's pretty rude, isn't it? That's pretty rude, really, right in front of Annie there. I mean, she didn't have designs on the job. She wasn't after the job. To be honest, she actually backs him up and she says, yeah, I agree. But still, Horton, you don't go around saying things like that. Not in front of everyone, embarrassing Annie like that. Git. Mrs. Z is adamant that Annie is going to do a fine job. So then we cut to, I think it's the next day, I could be wrong, and it's the first rehearsal without Mrs. Z. And they're playing this song and they're all playing really badly, and she tells them to slow down the song and they start speeding it up. And then they all sort of collapse because someone hits someone else with their instrument and they all fall over and they're banging stuff and dropping things. It's a shambles. It's a complete shambles. And all the people are like, I'm leaving. And Jane and Junior Kangaroo say this.
I told you a pageant without Mrs. Z is something that no one can do. I told you, I told you, I told you.
And guess what? I told you too.
Well, very nice, was it? No need for that, girls. So everyone's left, and there's not going to be a pageant. And Morton goes up to Horton and says this.
Pop, if we don't do the show, will there still be a jingle day?
Can I get back to you on that one, son?
So, is there going to be a jingle day? In the town, everyone is feeling down.
Hey, how you feeling?
Down. Downer than down.
Oh, you're downer than down. And Annie is walking around town looking pretty sad and she sees Mrs. Z. And Mrs. Z, Mrs. Zebarelli, says, have a go on my wobble. And her wobble is what she rides around on. It's kind of like a unicycle, but it's got handlebars. As Annie's trying to ride the unicycle, Mrs. Z is giving her advice. Have a listen.
Now, always move forward. Don't ever go back. Give it your all. Take up the slack.
But
But the show, Mrs. Z.
And one tiny pointer, but the biggest of all, just climb right back on if ever you fall.
Mrs. Z, can we please talk about the show?
Well, what did you think I was talking about?
Wobbling.
Oh, well, that too.
So then Annie gets a second wind and she's like, do you know what? We're going to do this pageant anyway. She goes back to the stage and she says, we're still going to put it on. We're going to do this. Let's start rehearsing. And all it is her, Horton and Morton. And then we get this short montage of them trying to play music and it all going wrong. And then them tap dancing and Horton falling over. It's not going good. It's not going good. But it's time for the pageant. No one turns up. No one turns up at all. The whole auditorium is empty. But you know what? They're going to perform anyway. And the first thing we get is Horton on roller skates and he falls over. But then we get this quote. Have a listen to this.
I meant what I said and I said what I meant. It isn't much fun to roll into cement.
See, what I loved about that is that's a twist on his quote from Horton Hatches the Egg. He says this. I meant what I said and I said what I meant. An elephant's faithful 100%. So I like that, you know, I thought that was something. Anyway, then they do their tap dancing, and that goes okay, actually. Tap dancing goes right. Admittedly, there's still no one in the audience, but still, the tap dancing goes well. Then they start ringing their bells, and it's quite a beautiful sound. And it cuts down to the town, and the kangaroos, and Fox, and Knox, and Thedwig, they can all hear it in the town. They're like, oh, the music's starting. Oh, they're playing a song. And they all head up to the theatre. Then the three of them, Annie, Horton and Morton, they all start the song. And this song's called The Song That I Sing. And this is the big song, the finale song for when the sun's meant to be coming up. And people start turning up in the audience. There's loads of people sitting there now. And the song's going on and the other band members join in and it gets louder. And it's quite a fabulous bit, actually. The audience are all singing along. Then we get an annoying bit. And this annoyed me because the deal is, after the clink gets tinked, is that right? Or after the tink gets... whatever tinking or clinking is going on, that's what's meant to make the sun come up. But the sun is already rising. Now, it's meant to rise to this circle. Hard to explain, but the sun comes up and it shines through this big circle that's on the edge of the theatre bit. But it's already started to rise. And this is the point where Morton starts to get scared. Well, Annie goes up to him. Guess what she says?
Morton, you don't know what you can do until you try.
There we go, boys and girls. Once again, the moral of the story. And then the sun starts to shine and the song gets even louder. Have a listen to the song. It really is a delightful song. Have a listen. Yeah, I loved that. I really liked it. Quite joyous. And then it ends. The Cat in the Hat's there and he says, well, that was many years ago. And then it cuts across to Annie and now she's an older lady. And you know how you can tell she's older? Well, she's had her hair cut shorter and she's wearing glasses. And she passes her baton to an even younger girl. And now she's going to take over. And that's the end. And you know what, boys and girls? I didn't like it much. And this is the problem. A couple of things I pointed out. Those aren't the things that bothered me. What bothered me is the show. It's just not that good. All the Muppets are filmed on green screen and all the backgrounds are these gaudy, bright, computer-generated images. Now, don't forget, this is back in 1996 where computer animation was in its infancy. So it just doesn't look that good at all. And I found it really hard to watch it. I had to watch it like two or three times before I actually watched it. Like, I just kept getting distracted because I wasn't enjoying it. And this is what happened when I first bought it. Now, years ago, I bought the whole DVD box set because I heard about it. I don't know how I heard about it. I must have been looking up Dr. Seuss when my girls were really young. And I found this. I thought, oh, the girls are going to love that. Then I put it on. Well, they didn't love it. Like I said earlier, two of my favourite things. I love Dr. Seuss. I love the Muppets. Put them together. Yes, not good at all. And it's a real shame because I've got this like 8-disc set and I've not watched them all. I've watched a couple of them and I didn't enjoy them, so I gave up on it. I just sat in the cupboard for about 8 years. There's a couple of other bits. I mean, as Christmas specials go, they've called it Jingle Day. That's meant to be Christmas Day. And people are wearing their winter clothes and that, but it's not very festive. It's snowing, but no one's wearing like Christmas hats. It just didn't feel that Christmassy. I can't recommend it to your kids. And that's why it's not a Christmas classic, I guess. One other thing I'll mention is that the Grinch is actually the bad guy in a lot of the episodes of The Wubbulous World of Dr. Seuss. He's there, in Muppet form. He's not in this episode. We get that guy reading the Grinch story, but we don't get to see the Grinch. And that's an interesting thing as well, because in the book, The Grinch Who Stole Christmas, it's like a Scrooge transformation. At the end, he's the good guy. Well, if that guy is reading the book on stage, then this must have all happened after the Grinch's transformation. So what's the Grinch doing being the bad guy in previous episodes and later episodes? What's that about? Are you telling us that his transformation didn't last and he became an arsehole again? Well, that's just ruined the whole Grinch Who Stole Christmas for me, hasn't it? It's such a shame, because it could have been so much more. It could have been fantastic. Instead, it wasn't that good. I won't be watching it again. I'm not going to recommend it to you guys. But now you know about it. And that's something. Yeah, pretty much the voices. I didn't really recognise most of the voices. I bet if you're a real Muppet connoisseur, you would. But I didn't. The only one I did recognise was the one who did Morton's voice. And his voice is the lady who did the voice of Moki in Fraggle Rock. Yeah, she's done loads of other things. She did the voice of Apple in A Christmas Toy as well. I recognised her voice, didn't recognise any others, so I'm not going to bother going into it. Let's just move on, shall we? Yeah, good idea. Let's do this. Boys and girls, this episode's recommendation is a podcast called Nothing Rhymes With Purple. Now, this is a podcast that talks about the English language and the words we use. It's hosted by a gentleman by the name of Giles Brandreth. Now, I don't imagine he's very famous in the US, but he's very famous in the UK. He was actually for a short time a politician, but before that and afterwards, he was a television celebrity. He seemed to know a lot about most things. And it's also hosted by a lady called Susie Dent. And she's an etymologist or a lexicographer or both, I don't know, who is on a TV show called Countdown, which is one of the longest running game shows in the UK. And they talk about different words, and it's just really interesting. The podcast is called Nothing Rhymes With Purple because it's widely believed that nothing rhymes with purple. However, if you listen to the show, you'll find out there is a word that rhymes with purple. I'm not going to tell you what it is. You'll have to listen to the show, won't you? It's just really interesting. It's really good. I've been listening to it on Audible. Annoyingly, there's adverts. You get adverts at the start, adverts in the middle, adverts at the end. But if you can ignore the adverts or fast forward through them, I think you'll enjoy it, and I think you'll learn a lot. So check it out. Podcast called Nothing Rhymes With Purple. And that is it for this episode. I really hope you've enjoyed it. I want to say a big thank you again to Jason Matusiak for sending in those songs for me to talk about. Of course, Bob Baker doing a wonderful job, and everyone who sent in your scores, well done. I appreciate that. Make sure you send in your score. It couldn't be easier. You just put your score and email it to totalchristmas@gmail.com. It's as simple as that. Now, I'm going to be back again in 2 weeks' time. I want you to be back here too, okay? You better be. I'll be waiting. In the meantime, of course, you know I love ya. Merry Happy Christmas!
What do you want?
Penny for the song, Governor?